On today's podcast, you're riding along with us as we discuss creatine supplementation, posing practice and training tips, and lessons we learned in managing life and athlete schedules. Okay, guys, thanks for joining us for our conclusion podcast of the year 2025. We wanted to talk about some things we learned that were important and pass them along. And it's kind of like a hodgepodge, so
buckle up.
Yeah. Thanks for riding with us. We're also trying this podcasting in the car because we...
kind of homeless.
We're doing a lot of things right now.
And we're traveling a lot, so we don't have a great podcast setup, so we figured it, you know, why not try it out. You guys know that we're pretty authentic anyway. We just kind of, it's basically a conversation between the two of us, so here we go.
Perfect. Okay, we just got done training at the gym, so babe, where do you want to start?
Well, I mean, since you just said training, we just recently released a video of some hip internal external rotation drills. And as far as things we've learned, I've noticed a lot of athletes neglect your hip internal external rotation. So like your femur actually rotating in the hip socket. So, well, yeah. Me too, you know. So we all do abduction, adduction. But I think it's very, very important that we close that chain and practice the rotation. So, just a real quick snippet of fast start.
It's more challenging than I expected.
Yeah, because it's a movement that kind of tightens up when we lose core stability. So our body looks for stability in our hip and shoulder joints. But so it's important to practice the rotation of your femur and your humerus, which is your upper arm bone. So
if you care about glute activation, my apple just went flying. I did, and I took a bite out of it and it went on the ground. If you're interested in glute activation, I would say that exercise really helped. I have like one hip that's weaker. Okay, here, let's tie that to some of our posing tips. So if you pose for bikini, my forward leading hip in my front pose is more mobile and less stable. Some of that is like repetitive posing of just kind of like either shifting into that hip or forward or anterior pelvic tilt in that pose. But anyways, it's a little bit more pliable. And so sometimes I have a little bit harder time just like stacking that hip and making it stable to target my glutes in my training. So doing that internal external exercise, I did that. And then I went ahead and did 45 degree glute back extension hypers. I forget what they're called.
Yeah, hyperextension, 45 degree hyperextension.
And that lagging hip that I usually have a little bit of trouble getting that glute activated as much as my other side, did much better. So I'm interested to use that prior to a lot more of my other lower body lifts. So something to try. If you want to see the video, it is on our Instagram or on YouTube. And like TC said, it's internal, external
hip rotations.
And it's a video to some really great Jamaican tropical music.
Makes you want to watch it and see what's going on.
Because, yeah, actually, I think it's perfect. But anyways, yeah, so since we're on the topic of bikini posing, I think the... if you do posing that does not require symmetrical activation, you probably should pose on the other side too. So the, you know, biggest culprit I can think of is a bikini front pose. We only have to pose one side. Our back pose obviously has to be symmetrical, but you're like a men's classic or bodybuilding, like you're required to do quarter turns.
side bicep.
Figure, you record, do quarter turn. So there's like a little bit of like practice in that aspect that can make your body more balanced. Whereas bikini, most of us only practice one side. And so we can end up with some instability, restriction, rotation through our thoracic spine, a lot of issues. So I started asking people to pose on their other side for their check-ins. And I started making myself pose on the other side as well too. Not because I needed to look perfect, but it also, it, for like stability from right to left, or mimicking like similar patterns on both sides of your body. But also I feel like it is helpful in making me think like, okay, how am I posing on my good side? And like, what am I actually doing? And trying to mimic it on my other side. So it's helping me use my brain and how I'm controlling my body.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the trick that isn't talked about a whole lot, the trick to good posing is being able to activate fully 100% and look relaxed while you're doing it.
Yes.
And that comes from having good control over your kinetic chain in its entirety, right? Your bracing and your posture has to start from like your head and your spinal column. Right, so from there out is how we need to be bracing. And when you only pose to one side, especially when you only pose looking in a mirror, it can really mess up your proprioception and your proprioceptive feedback. So yeah, definitely practice both sides. I do my side bicep on both sides, and I have a side where it's comfortable and I have a side where it's pretty challenging. But like Chris was saying, it kind of shows you how to get that activation that you want, and then you can apply it to the other side, and all of a sudden that feels and looks even better. So just remember, there's always more. No matter how you're doing it now, play around with it, try things a little differently, try to get a little more activation. Just never settle.
I also think that's a good point about the mirror. So that's something recently TC and I have both discovered separately during our training, is sometimes the mirror is messing us up in the gym. So it was interesting yesterday. He started saying something about trying to not use the mirror, and I had the same exact thought either the day before or the day of. I was doing squats, and every time I was looking at myself in the mirror, some part of my movement was breaking down. And I don't know exactly what it was, but if I didn't concentrate on my body in the mirror and I just concentrated on like a spot on the floor or something, it felt much more efficient. I felt locked in. So I think there's a time and a place for using the mirror, because there has been times where it's been really helpful because I can see what's happening, or I'm like, wow, I'm really crooked. And then there's other times where I feel like it can be detrimental. So kind of feeling out what space you're in and not overusing a tool too much, I think can be helpful.
Yeah, I think I found that I like using mirrors for isometric work, and because it allows you, you're in one spot, so you can look internally, feel how you're feeling, feel what is activating, what's moving, what's not. And then you can look while you're in the same position and get that external feedback, right? So we can have internal and we can have external feedback simultaneously. Now, when you're moving, you can't get internal and external feedback at the same exact time from every single kinetic chain checkpoint, right? So we have to separate those two things. And I found the best way to do that is to record your sets. You feel what it feels like. You go internally, like Chris was saying, you allow yourself to focus on one spot, because we want our eyes and our head and our neck in one single position for the entire set. And then we can go back, we can watch that set, we can see how we were moving to elicit what we were feeling. So I like using the mirror for isometrics. I like internal visualization for movements.
That's great.
You didn't ask me, but
You're doing a great job, like switching to the speed limit, by the way, and talking. So also, if you need sunglasses, let me know.
Thanks, babe.
Okay. I think another key thing that has been helpful is head position and feet activation, which people don't really think about because they're like, I don't know, you're not building muscle in your head or your feet. So people don't think about it because they are thinking about all the other muscles that they're trying to activate to bring a lot of tension there to, you know, either improve strength, improve hypertrophy, whatever it is. But I noticed most recently when I was doing a 45 degree back extension, back to that thing, that I was really pushing my head forward a lot, which I can tend to do in a hip thrust, and I've hurt my neck doing that. I think
spending a lot of time on your phone or a computer or in a seated position or driving can put us in a forward head posture and make you more prone to do that when you're exerting yourself.
But also when you're trying really hard.
Yeah, when you're exerting.
I'm like, yeah, I'm pushing.
Yeah.
You can push your head forward. But keeping your spine more in alignment by keeping your head back has helped a lot. And there's a lot of problems that can stem from, like, just forward head posture.
Yeah, it puts a lot of excess pressure on your cervical spine, your thoracic spine. It makes a lot of muscles overly tight, so it alters the length-tension relationship surrounding each of the joints in your vertebrae going down your cervical and thoracic spine, and it makes it more difficult for you to, like, bend over effectively. Makes it more difficult for us to utilize different strength and bracing pathways. I started my day off today. I was doing some squats, and I started my day off today with some resistance band chin tucks. And I did them seated, and I really, really focused on engaging my abdominals, including my obliques, while I was doing this. And then I added to that movement, I put a resistance band between my hands, and I did some external rotation to make sure that I had nice full activation through my torso. And I feel like it really, really did a good job at getting all of my erectors activated the way they should be. I was able to brace more properly when I went to start squatting, and a bunch of little aches and pains that I normally deal with, not there at all. So yeah, definitely focus on your head position. I see the vast majority of our athletes at the top of a deadlift, pushing their head forward, at the top of a squat, pushing their head forward. You know, when the bar comes down to their chest, pushing their head forward. And generally speaking, this comes from various mobility issues, which comes from a weak core, right? A lot in the bench, for example, it comes from shoulder mobility issues because you can't go into that, abduction and internal rotation, and your shoulder girdle comes with it and picks your head up off the bench, right? Whereas when we can achieve that position more effectively, we actually have the mobility and we can keep ourselves in position better and stay braced better.
That shoulder extension?
Yeah, this is horizontal abduction. This is flexion.
Yeah.
This is
extension.
Yeah, sorry.
We
got all this messed up all the time. Sorry, everybody.
I think that's a good point, too. And I actually think the bench press has been a really good marker for me to think about my head in the right position and alignment with my spine. Because when you're just, like, standing up, sometimes it's, like, hard to figure out, like, where is my head supposed to be? And you think about tucking your chin, you think about just tilting your head down versus, like, taking your whole skull and moving it back over top of your spine. And with the tactile cue, like a flat bench, it's helped me, like, try and stretch my spine, like, up along the bench and have my head, like, you know, flush against the pad there. So it kind of helps. I think about that, like, being super, super tall on that bench, basically.
Yeah.
And then I can use that while I'm standing up in free space. So I don't know if that helps or not.
Yeah, that's great. And I think the extension and then the bracing on top of that helps you to come back to your core bracing, which is what allows us to alleviate a lot of our trap, shoulder girdle, and hip girdle tightness, right?
Yeah.
When we don't have the core stability, our bodies look for that stability somewhere else, and it's generally right here in the back of the neck, in the traps, in the shoulder joints themselves, and we lose the shoulder mobility. And then the same thing with the hip joints. We lose that internal, external rotation potential, and it's because our body is trying to tighten these hypermobile joints, right? They're ball and socket joints. They're made to be hypermobile. comparatively speaking, like to elbow hinge joints and stuff. So our body, it starts to freak out because we don't have the stability necessary in our torso to be able to move the way we're supposed to move. So it all comes back to core bracing, core stability, and being able to utilize your abdominals properly and being able to use all of your abdominal muscle groups properly, right? Because we have the rectus, the six pack, we have the obliques, the outside and the sides, and then we have your internal obliques, and then we have your transverse abdominis. So we have a lot of muscle groups that we have to be able to engage and activate properly.
Exactly. Now for the feet, I have done more training with my shoes off most recently. I know some gyms are like super weird about taking your shoes off for liability reasons. I totally get it. I will take my shoes off like right at the Smith machine or right wherever I'm working out.
Yeah, pop them off.
And then I will put them back on if I go get plates or weights or whatever, but I'll just kind of like, you know, just to be respectful and not draw attention. But I will tell you, my glutes work so much better when I can feel the ground with my feet. And I actually try and like encourage myself like to try hard by gripping the ground with my feet and my toes. So
yeah,
my feet are not super strong. So I know that's a weak point, but the more that I try and focus on, I don't know, exercising that,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to explain, but I just feel like I'm able to like really light up my glutes a lot more because I feel like for some reason my feet just give me a little bit more control over my body. And I'm not trying to rely on something else like my hamstrings or my quads or
mm-hmm. or just one of them, right?
Yeah,
because yeah, so since our each muscle fiber is 0 or 100% like potentiation activation, having full foot activation is going to necessarily create more upstream activation, right? When your body feels like it doesn't need to create that much stability, it might only get the internal, the external stability pathway. It may only drive through, you know, one part of your quad muscle. We want to get the entire thing. So we have to work as hard as possible at getting all the activation. And we have to be in control of our muscles. And we have to dictate to them that, yes, we do need all of these muscle fibers active and awake and engaged for this movement pattern. And I think rooting is a very good way to do that. I grew up with tendonitis and osteoarthritis in my knees. Both of them have huge lumps on them from like bone deposit buildup because they were, you know, they told me it was like rubbing together and creating this buildup. It hurt a lot and it was very, very tender. I started squatting. I went on the squat program where I squatted 4 times a week. And at the beginning, my knees hurt. I took my shoes off. My knee pain went away and has not come back since. Every once in a while, I have some different knee things from other things, but my osteoarthritis knee pain, non-existent. And it is from learning how to root properly in my lifting. So that came back from my Kabuki strength education. That was very eye-opening to like really start thinking about that stuff. Because I've always walked around barefoot, right? Like, you know, yeah. I'm an outside dog. I don't love shoes or clothes in general. And every chance I get, I would be outside barefoot. And so my feet were pretty strong. So it was just a matter of learning how to use them properly. And man, it was a game changer. It was a complete game changer. So yeah, every chance you get, if you can do your lower body days with no shoes, do it. If you can walk around with no shoes, do it. If you can walk around in grass or dirt or sand or something like not a flat hard surface with no shoes, do it. Because it's going to help increase the strength of your feet and your ankles and your calves and your core as well.
That's what I try to do at the beach, is walk on the sand just a little bit.
Yeah, because your core has morning. To stabilize your hips. Like it's really, really good. And so many people, like if all our listeners out there, I want you to think right now, when was the last time I walked on something that was not like pavement or concrete or, you know, a paver pad, like something hard and flat, right? When was the last time you didn't walk on something that wasn't hard and flat? And it was probably a while ago. So yeah, we need to keep
our body's activated and we can't let them get lazy and deactivate bracing patterns because they're not being used. We need to take control.
Yeah, that's great. My favorite memory of TC is when, probably the first year we were dating, I looked outside and he had climbed a tree. I don't know how you actually climbed this tree.
Just climbed it.
He only had shorts on, no shirt, no shoes, no socks, just like a monkey. And he had a chainsaw. So he was trimming trees in shorts only. I don't even know how you were hanging onto this tree. I don't even know.
We were taking that tree down.
I took pictures. Took pictures and I sent them to my mom. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. How did you get all the way up there with no shoes? So anyways, your feet could be really helpful in activation. And I think the better we can activate, the more we can hone in on certain areas to help build them. So
yeah. And actually, if you think about like your bench press or any of your exercises, everyone tells you to grip the bar really, really hard, right? And you feel more activation upstream in your torso, in your back, in your abs. So it's the same principle. We want to grip the ground really, really hard. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's great. And so one instance that I would not encourage barefoot training is if you are on one of those wood platforms in the gym. So Planet Fitness right now has a lot. This is amazing, but they have barbell squat racks, deadlift platforms.
They got free weights.
They're making some great changes. And that's where we work out when we travel, which is quite often. So, but a lot of those wood platforms are very slick. And so it is, I don't know, probably not a great idea to be in socks trying to deadlift or squat.
The rooting
is not really happening in that situation.
Yeah, we tell people the ground is the most stable part of your lift, so we want to make sure that that's the truth. And when you're in socks on one of those wood platforms, if you're squatting, okay, a better example is if you're sumo deadlifting, right? Your feet are probably going to be driving out. Even though I think about like pulling my heels to my butt as I'm driving, we're still driving outwards, and we don't want our feet to be sliding when we have weight on our back or in our hands. So yeah, just either bring a carpet or a little mat or something, or like a yoga mat would work fine.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Or just do all of your rooting exercises, like your internal external rotation, your wall clamshells, your lateral hip shifts, or do all of those barefoot or you know, without shoes, and then you can do your squats with shoes.
What about socks with like grip on the bottom?
You can try those depending on how much you push out or pull in during your squat. Yeah. Like some people say, you know, tear the floor apart.
It might shift.
Yeah, so the socks might roll over. I had some deadlift slippers that were okay, but they would roll.
Oh, really?
They would roll out. Yeah, those lifting large ones.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, that's good to know. Okay. What about some lessons that you've learned this year?
Oh, man. I think the biggest one is about like balance. And you do one thing well. You do two things okay. You do three things poorly. You could do four things if you are going crazy and pulling your hair out. Moral of the story is the more things you try to do at the same time, the more things you try to accomplish, the more responsibilities that you undertake, the lower the quality on each of those projects, I think. And that comes from our experience as athletes working as online coaches for our athletes, while also running events for a powerlifting federation and acting as the vice president for the powerlifting federation and the second lady, I guess it would be, because all of those positions are demanding, especially when you're like trying to grow all of them, right? When you're just trying to maintain something, it becomes a little bit easier. And that's really what ended up happening. I feel like, at least for me, for my athletic endeavors in the past couple of years, I've really just been maintaining because my focus has been elsewhere. I've been trying to do so many other things. Things slip through the cracks and you get frustrated and you get stressed and then nothing's growing anyway because you're stressed out.
Yeah.
So, right. Yeah. So really, it's really, really important to specifically iterate or verbalize or write down your goals, prioritize them, and then decide what you need to do on a daily basis to reach those goals, right? The more organized you can be, the more we can accomplish. And I think that's a really important caveat too. So
I think it's a good time to do evaluation and...
Yeah, this time of year. Yep.
Yeah, and maybe specify... Because I've been starting to ask people, what do you want to do next year?
Yeah. And I think remembering that discipline is freedom, right? So many people get caught up in, well, I don't want to do the same thing every day. Well, I don't want to have to... They don't want to get locked into anything because they want to feel like they're free. But when you are disciplined, you can be more efficient with your time. You can get more done. And then you end up having more free time to spend however you want.
I love the same thing for the most part. Yeah. Eventually I get bored, but
yeah, some people want that routine. Some people just want to go through their days and do the same exact thing every day. Some people get really well, but most people don't want to be told that they have to do that every single day.
That's true.
Right. And yeah, when you were being told how many macros you could eat every single day of the year, on season, off season, didn't matter. And not just your calories, right? Your carbs, fat, and protein.
And my steps.
Yeah, it gets really, really old. So there has to be some freedom, but there also has to be some discipline and some consistency.
Yeah.
So that we can continue making the progress that we want to make.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's different for everybody. Like, there's different shades of what, but there's truth to both of that.
Yeah.
To all of that, because I do feel like people appreciate structure when they have flexibility, and they appreciate some flexibility when they have structure. So it's
yes.
Finding the balance.
Yeah. And there's a fourth aspect in there too, right? We're athletes, coaches, event directors, and we are working on a relationship. So that is a very important aspect again that I think a lot of people don't really think about. A relationship is work. It's a project. And if you don't put time into it, you reap what you sow, right? So I think it's very important to pour into the person that you expect to support you. Whether you're a competitor listening right now or you are a competitor support group, I think it's important to remember that different seasons and different chapters of our lives call for different levels of support from each of our each partner in a relationship. Yeah, so remembering that, like, it's not always going to be you supporting them or vice versa. It will be the other way around, and putting time into learning how to best do that so that you're both happy, I think is very important and leads to future happiness. So, and it makes it so that when you're in crisis, you don't have to figure shit out together. You know, and then, because that's when I think people argue, is when shit is stressful. I want it to be like, we are practiced at communicating. We know what the other one wants, and we can take care of this. We can do anything together. So,
yeah, stress will definitely, or over scheduling or trying to do too much. You're right. Stuff will.
It adds up. And yeah, man, you don't want to take your stress from a situation out on your partner, out on your home, right? That's your home. That's you're supposed to be your safe space and you're supposed to be their safe space. So we want to make sure that we are managing our stress effectively and we are not overburdening ourselves so that we then take that stress back to our household and our homestead and we share it with our partner and our families.
Yeah.
Because that's not being a good leader as a man or a woman, right? So we want to make sure that we're just always striving to be the best version of ourselves that we can be. And I have found that I feel like I'm the best version of myself when I'm looking for ways to help my partner or other people.
Yeah, I think that we took some inventory this year of what, what we've done, where we're headed, what we had on our plates, got rid of some things. I feel like this is not the first year that it's kind of like...
It's like, life is like a bush or a tree, right? So you got some growth,
yeah.
Some of it's going to be good, some of it you got to snip out of there.
You got choices to make.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's relationships, like just kind of creating some distance with certain relationships. Sometimes it's responsibilities that you have to remove. Sometimes it's just like overzealous. I'm going to do all these things. I'm going to be great at this and that and this and that. And yeah. Like you said, sometimes
you bite off more than you could chew.
Yeah. Sometimes you can't do it all. Yeah. And it's okay. It's okay that if you have to prioritize or choose. But
yes.
The beauty is that you get choices.
Yeah.
And sometimes just slowing down enough to like think about it and make those adjustments.
Yeah. I think a beneficial thing that we do is we sit down in the evenings and talk about the next day. So that we can plan out, so that we're both on the same page. When we don't sit and plan out what we're going to do the next day, things are a little more hectic, and they're definitely less efficient. So, you know, get on the same page as the people that you're working with, whatever it is, whether it's relationship, whether it's, you know, your actual work. I think, you know, touching base at the end of the day with expectations for the next day, and maybe on the weekend for expectations through the week. I think that is really beneficial as well, like keeping us focused on those goals that we were talking about before, that, you know, we know that we need to do on a consistent basis to attain our, you know, the achievements that were our aspirations.
Right, exactly. Okay, we're back with part two of our wrapping up 2025 podcast episode, last one for the year. And we started to talk about lessons we've learned from clients. But I think real quick, let's just touch on the creatine topic, because that's something we've been talking about a lot, getting a lot of questions on. So thank you guys for submitting your questions on Instagram, all different avenues, emails, check-ins, all the things.
In the gym.
In the gym. So we did a live most recently. We did talk about how we currently are using creatine monohydrate. We got a couple questions on creatine HCL. And TC, what's your take on the difference between the two of them?
Okay, so yeah, so we also actually dove a little bit deeper into it in our last podcast as well, that was on supplements. But I was not specific in the fact that the study that we were citing, where they tested the creatine with women in different stages of menopause, it was actually done with creatine HCL. So while creatine monohydrate remains as the most studied form of creatine and the most studied supplement in general, there is science backing creatine HCL, and it can be a good alternative for people who can experience digestive upset if they take too much creatine monohydrate. So I haven't seen any adverse effects of HCL, except I personally have thrown up after using it one time. So that's not to say that it doesn't agree with my system, but creatine monohydrate does, and it's generally a little bit cheaper. So that's generally what I go for personally.
He also took it and started sprinting.
Yeah. But so, that was what I was doing at the time. That wasn't anything different.
So try it out. If you're unsure, you know, like TC has mentioned before, creatine does attract water because it's, you know, it's hydroponic.
Yeah.
Hydroponic, so we'll attract water. So if you have creatine in your digestive system, it's going to pull some water into your digestive system. You'll probably feel a little bit bloated. And no one wants to feel bloated. So, yeah, you could definitely try out the creatine HCL. And just pay attention to dosing suggestions. Same?
Yeah, I would say, you know, whatever your serving size is, I wouldn't double up on the serving individually. I would still spread them out. I think no matter what the supplement is, it's not always more is better. If we're going to take more of something, generally speaking, it's going to be better if we can spread it out more.
And you said HCL is a little more concentrated.
Yeah, it's a lot more concentrated. It's I think it's like you should be able to take, I mean, at the most like 20% of what you would take with monohydrate. So if you're taking 5 grams, you could take 1 gram of HCL for similar benefit. I think even less than that. I think it might be 750. I think maybe 750. Oh, that's a sweet old bus. Okay, sorry everybody.
Okay. So then let's talk about lessons we've learned from clients, because we always are learning as coaches. We're learning content, like fitness material, health material, but we also learn stuff from interacting with different people, different athletes. And we encourage our athletes to communicate with us a lot, which again helps us grow together. So we're always going to, I feel like every year we walk away learning something new. I'll go first. So I believe one of the biggest things I learned this year, or started to evaluate learning, is how much to share. Sometimes I'll send check-in videos, if you've been on the receiving end of this, that are like 30 minutes long of me talking about all the things that I think, because I just want to give. Like, I want this person to have as much information as they possibly can. I want to equip you. I want you to digest it all. But that's a large meal I just served you, and so, you know, stuff's going to fall through the cracks. So giving large amounts of information requires repetition on a regular basis. Actually, repetition's, I think, part of coaching. But just because you say it once, you may need to say it again. And I've learned that in different seasons, the amount of information I give is important. So if somebody's like dieting and they're pretty depleted, concise information is best. Not going into long explanations and making sure that they can absorb what I'm trying to share so they can put it into action. And there's not like extra mental energy trying to figure out what was my coach trying to tell me.
Yeah.
In more relaxed seasons, I can share a little bit more. And I like doing that because I think that it encourages people to think for themselves, develop their own problem solving and good intuition with their physique, versus just like always having to look for a coach to tell them what to do 100% of the time, right? Which brings me to my next point, is I feel like we try to educate at Reckless Training. We want you to have the information why we suggest something that we suggest. And we also like you to develop, like I said, intuition to be able to think for yourself. But there are times where, actually most of the time, it's a lot of like evaluating, communicating with your coach, coming to a conclusion together. But there are specific short periods of time where it requires just following the protocol. Obviously, if something's coming up, to communicate it, but...
I would say it's so, as an athlete, our job is to look for that consistency and to know that our job is to perfect the basics, right? So we need to continue moving along, but our job is also to practice that introspection and to, like you're saying, be more in tune with our entire kinetic chain instead of being distracted in our workouts and not having that feedback to bring back to the coach. Right. If after the workout we're saying something is hurting, but we can't pinpoint when it's happening in the workout, we're too distracted in the workout. Right. So we need to make sure that we are focused enough as athletes to be able to bring that information back. And then I think the athlete coach relationship just continues to develop as we continue to communicate more and more, because then we're more in tune. Each of us is more in tune with the body that we're trying to grow. And we're more focused on the goals, right? I think that's the important thing, is we want to be able to direct you as coaches in a way that allows you to continue focusing on the singular goal that you have in mind at this point in time.
Okay, so, I'll be more specific, because I was thinking about like peak week. Peak week, we just need to follow the plan.
Yeah.
Outside of peak week, we can have a little bit of flexibility and talk about like...
But you need to know if something's bloating though, right? You know, so that's just that introspection where they give you that feedback. So it's doing the plan and it's performing everything consistently, and then it's giving the feedback. It's not making changes just out of whim, right? It's bringing back and making a team decision. Because there were times when you had people eating artificial sweeteners up peak week. And you didn't know because it was fitting in their macros until they said something about, oh, well, I'm thinking about taking this out. Well, yeah, like I told you to take that out already.
Okay. Well, that's a couple different points that I was talking about. So I think having autonomy is important so that you're not dependent on a coach 100% of the time, 365 days of the year. I like to teach that. But there are times where, I mean, obviously you still have choices, but you, if there's specific instructions relayed, it's more important to pay attention to those specific instructions at pivotal times, like right before peak week, getting ready for a show. And you're right, like being able to ask, that's the other thing is I feel like I've learned to ask more specific questions and touch base more frequently when it comes to those times where things are a little bit more time sensitive. So like, just because I wrote a protocol on peak week does not mean that people have seen everything on there and they're following it 100%. I do believe people try, but there's so much going on that I feel like it is a good job. It would be smart of me as a coach to touch base a little bit more and just ask the annoying questions. How much water did you drink? Because the more I did that this year, like ask some of those specific things, the more I found out that things weren't exact as how originally prescribed, but it allowed us to be able to pivot and put good physiques on stage. So, maybe that was clear, maybe that's not clear, but yeah, I want people to have freedom. I like having freedom as an athlete, but I do understand when there's time that things have to be a little bit more restrictive or concise. Does that make sense?
It's great.
What about training through injury? Is there something specific that you would give advice or you learned this year?
Yeah. The plant that grows is the one you water. Right? So if you remain focused on what is injured and what hurts, it's probably going to be... And now that's not... Okay, let me expand on that afterwards. And that's probably going to be... If we maintain a focus on what hurts, then I think that it's going to be much more difficult to come out of that because we aren't practicing a mentality of growth and progression. So I think that it's very important to maintain our focus on what we are able to do in combination, in concert with trying to fix the issue. Right? Because if we only try to fix the issue, we're not getting any kind of gratification as athletes. And it's just not, I think it's not good for your mentality. So you need to maintain some aspects of training that feel good and feel like they're moving you towards your goals. And I think that that is also kind of dependent on your mentality and your perspective surrounding those things too, right? So your diet is something that no matter what is happening to your body, you can control. You can control the amount of processed food that you eat, which in turn, the amount of inflammation that you're causing because of that processed food. You can control the amount of calories that you eat. You can control the amount of protein that you eat. You can control the quality of the foods that you're eating. And I think that a lot of people get so caught up in what they can't do that they forget about all the things that they still can't do. And yeah, and sometimes what I found is that a lot of times these injuries are just redirecting us in a direction that, like, towards one of our weak points that we've been trying to avoid. So it's very important to listen and to look for what we can learn through these things. And it kind of goes back to that study that they did, and I look back on it, and it was on tennis players, the top 5 tennis players in the world versus the rest of the top 25. And their mentality being the difference, being the single most performance-altering thing that they could do is have a positive mentality surrounding anything that happened to them. So I think that that's very important. That's an elite athlete mentality. And just like any other muscle, it takes time to develop. So we need to be patient with ourselves and have grace.
which is also another skill that you get to develop along the way. You get to develop two at once, maybe even three if you want to count patience in there, patience with yourself. So any kind of quote-unquote injury or quote-unquote setback can be seen as a gift and a opportunity for improvement. And as long as we maintain that focus, you can't lose. You literally can't lose.
So. I think injury is also, unfortunately, more common than we'd like to recognize when it comes to being an athlete. If you're pushing your body to the limit, you're in that precarious zone of like reaching a new level, but also putting your body under this like point of stress. So like hearing that one time I did hear that, I was like, injuries are actually, I think Brett Contreras actually said, you know, injuries are actually more common than people realize, made it more normal. So if I was encountering an issue, which I have in my training, it wasn't as discouraging. Yeah, it's like,
it's not like red alert.
Yeah, like, hey, this happens.
Yeah, it's part of the journey. It's just another hurdle, that's all.
Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, so focus on what you can control, focus on what you can affect positive change in, and continue to do that, right? Just continue to do that.
Are there other things that you feel like you learned from clients this year?
I think similar to you, more communication is better from both sides. Like you said, asking more questions, checking in more often. Just because you don't hear from someone doesn't mean that they don't need you. And I think that's it. I think you covered it.
Yeah. It can be tough because you don't want to bother someone over and over and over again. Sometimes people's lives get busy. But, yeah, I think the more conversation there is, the...
Yeah. Look, that's why we have the app, right? Send as many messages as you want. Send as many messages, as many videos. As we get on there, when we get on there, when it's work time, it's work time. And that's what we are looking to do. We are looking to answer questions and answer messages and reply to videos and give feedback and just help, right? That's what we're looking to do when we sign on there as coaches. So yeah, I've learned that it's not always, the athletes aren't always going to bring you the problem. Sometimes you got to go out looking for them.
Yes, that's so, a good point.
Yeah, that it's our job as coaches, not just to make people stronger, not just to make people look better, not just to make people move better, not just to fix problems that people bring to us, but also to like help find them and try to, you know, prevent the vast majority of these, you know, bigger issues and injuries from popping up. So you're gonna have the small ones every once in a while where you're still training, but you're like, ah man, this is kind of bothering me, what's going on? So that, like Chris said, that's part of the journey, and I think that's really important to remember. But training properly and maintaining the proper perspective and intentionality, and communication and alterations in the programming, I think can really make a difference in making a mountain out of a molehill.
Sidebar, something I just did recently is I did TC Design to Recovery Day. I did it yesterday, actually. And I watched every video on the app. I rewatched it. I read every instruction because I was like, let me just see, like, I don't know. I was just really, I needed to do something in the gym. And I was also like, too poor thinking. I was thinking, what are people experiencing when they're seeing this in the app? And then also like, wow, I really need to refresh my memory on a lot of these things that I might have done and not done in months. And it was really great. I actually feel like my lift today, I needed to do less like activation warm-up work. I actually almost forgot because I felt like ready to go. And also my lower body felt, I did upper body lift, but my lower body also felt really great. So I'm excited to train lower body tomorrow, but it just reinstated the positive effect of doing that mobility and recovery work and making time for it. I had been on my rest days still going to the gym and just doing some cardio and either like reading or doing some work just to get some movement in. And then I was doing just like a little bit of like, you know, foam rolling, using a Theragun, just being intuitive with what my I thought that my body needed. But so much work that was in this recovery program was like directed towards the spine. Or that was the aspect I think that I hadn't been concentrating on. I was just thinking about hips or just thinking about shoulders, but not thinking about like my neck or thoracic rotation. And I really feel like it made a big difference. So I know that recovery work can be boring and we feel like it's not really making my muscles grow and
but it kind of is.
It's not as fun as like drinking caffeine and putting on some great music and just like hammering it out. It's a little bit more like you need more,
just less glamorous.
Yeah. But I do feel like it did pay off in my lift today, and I think I will be trying to reincorporate some of that stuff. I really feel like it helped my spine a lot.
Yeah, I think people get bored with it and they just start going through the motions and then they're like, oh, this doesn't do anything. Well, yeah. It did the first time you did it, and it stopped working because we stopped using that same intentionality. So I think that maintaining that perspective, but also like maintaining some newness and exploration during those recovery days is important too, for longevity.
Well, after I left the gym yesterday, because I also wasn't feeling super great, so it was another reason I did recovery day, I was like, wow, I feel pretty good. Not like a million bucks, but I feel pretty good. Today, I felt like I felt the most difference. Yeah. Recovery. Do it.
Earn your workouts.
Okay. Since we're going into the next year, and it's December, any advice you have for people moving into the next year or things that you are planning for yourself?
Well, I think the advice is a good segue, because my advice is just make sure that you're paying attention to what you're doing. Be intentional. Man, when I was young, I would get in trouble and I would tell my dad I didn't mean to. And he would say, you didn't mean not to. And that really stuck with me. But like, if you bring that into every aspect of your life and you become a lot more intentional with a lot of your actions, and you realize how much influence little things can have. It's all of the little things that add up that so many people just discount. It kind of goes along the same lines of people overestimate what they can do in the short term and they underestimate what they can do in the long term. So be patient, understand that perfecting the small, not really glamorous things adds up. And that's what every successful athlete or any other successful person in any field, that's what they have done, is just mastered and remained consistent with doing the basics. So yeah, be intentional, have a reason for everything that you're doing in the gym, pay attention to everything that you're doing in the gym, and understand that your decisions outside of the gym also influence your progress towards your athletic aspirations.
That's great advice, babe.
Thanks, babe. As far as what I'm doing, I am right now trying to increase my protein so that we can have a successful prep for a bodybuilding show next year. And then my goal is to reverse out into a powerlifting event. So I'm adding in compound lifts again, starting to squat, starting to deadlift heavy. Dropped a barbell on my chest the other day. So
yeah. I was right there.
Just like slipped out of my hands.
I didn't do a thing.
Yeah, it's okay. I didn't have clips on there, so I just dumped the weight.
I'd never seen someone bail weight, actually.
It was only 275. I still, to this day, I have no idea what happened. It just really just slipped out of my hand. So that's a lesson. Just everyone be careful. And if you're benching, if you're squatting, set up the spotter arms. It's really, it's not a big deal, and it might save you a rib or two. So, yeah, just be careful. But anyway, yeah, so that's the game. We're going to be focusing heavily on ourselves as athletes and on reckless training and our athletes in reckless training. And I think it's going to be a really fun year.
I am really excited about the year ahead. I feel like I got, I was able to talk to a couple of clients on the phone and just get on the same page with like expectations and mentality around competing. And I feel like we're setting ourselves up for good, whether it's improvement season or dieting season. I'm just feeling excited. It's always good when you feel like you guys are like moving towards the same goal. Yeah. And I feel like we're learning together and navigating a lot of things together. So yeah, I think it's gonna be a really fun year. What would my advice be? I don't know. You should have prepared that.
Maybe you didn't even have to put yourself on the spot like that. You could have just said, all right, well, to wrap it up. Instead, you said, I don't have any advice for you people.
I'm tapped out. It's Friday.
Friday morning, and all her blood is still in her shoulders.
Yeah. What I'm doing, though, because people keep eating.
Oh, man. Start over.
People do keep eating. But people keep asking me if I'm competing. That's what I'm trying to say. I don't know. I'm feeling good. This is a long improvement season. I took, for several reasons. One, we're just moving around. There's so much going on. I just don't want to add that extra thing to the plate of me trying to not stress out. And I'm trying to not stress out about a million other things. Also, I have been pleasantly content with my physique. Obviously, I want to put more muscle on, but a lot of times I feel like people want to start dieting because they don't like where their body fat level is, or they just don't like how they look, so they want to start dieting for that reason. And I in the past would feel that way, and this is a physique that I feel good about, which is nice.
I feel like that's really where you want to be in when you start a prep.
Yeah.
I feel like it means you have good muscle mass. Your body, your metabolism is functioning properly. You're not carrying a bunch of inflammation. So.
I did change a lot in my lifestyle over the past couple years. A lot. Mostly, like, dietary things, like stuff that we've shared on the podcast. My training has been more intense. But just trying to focus on overall health has been in the forefront of my mind. And I feel like it's brought really good results just in how I feel, how I view my body. So I am still building into that pro bikini physique, and I do want to get back on stage. I think it'll determine what next year looks like for us, because we're considering a couple options. And I always try and time things perfectly, which
is a human condition.
A fool's errand.
Yep, trying to have control over all the variables.
I want to know when all my clients are competing, so I don't mess up that. And then I also want to know all the things that you're doing, which changes.
That's my advice. I changed my mind. That's my advice to people. Don't try to control too many variables. You can only control your reaction.
Listen. but yeah, so I mean, that is good advice. So yeah, I think probably sometime in the near future soon, but I don't have any plans at the moment. Happy where things are. And I think after last season, I had to really think about how I was going to grow muscularity, because I was behind the eight ball when it comes to like density on stage for Pro Bikini. And I just didn't want to put certain things in my body. So I figured I would just take a little bit more time to grow and again, look at overall health. So here we are. Here we are.
Yeah, there's always a trade-off. In the contractor world, there's not really a saying, but it's quality, price, and expediency, basically. You can choose two to have in your favor, and one, at least one is going to be something you don't like. So if you want it fast and well-crafted, it's going to be expensive, right? If you want it cheap and fast, it's probably not going to be that well-crafted. So it's the same thing with your body. You know, we need to, there's definitely going to be trade-offs, and whatever trade-offs you want to make, that's okay. Just understand, again, going back to the intentionality, just understand what those trade-offs are. And I think, you know, for the vast majority of people, just choosing to optimize your body's capabilities through various means is a really, really good starting point. Sorry, babe. Didn't mean to come.
No, that's great. That's great. And actually, my advice would be for people to take some time to think about what they want next year. I think that would be my advice. Like, you probably have to make a couple different appointments with yourself just because you start thinking about it and you're like, I don't know. Just write a bunch of things down. Let it marinate. Think about it a little bit more. But I think just putting some forethought. That's why I kind of prompted it with my clients. It's like, what are you thinking for next year? Will help you plan, and then it helps you put a process into place where you can be successful. So yeah, take some time to think about how this year has gone, where you're headed, and what you want next year to look like. And if you make some appointments with yourself, just sit in quiet and either write stuff down. Doesn't have to be perfect. It's just you thinking. But I think we're in such a busy, fast-paced world with lots of distractions that sometimes time can go by so fast because we're just reacting and we don't take the time to actually do that introspection and then plan and think forward. And you, like TC said, you don't have to have all the details, but if you want to do this, what's it look like to get there? So, yeah, plan a good, successful 2026. We're excited for you. Anything else you want to add?
I don't think so. Let's okay. Do it.
All right, guys. So, thank you for supporting us through the year and watching our podcasts. Remember, we do an Instagram Live Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we're just... there covering a topic, but we really invite people to participate, ask questions, and we usually will post it on our Instagram as well if you want to watch the playback, but the live interactions allows us to give like a little bit more thorough response.
Maybe we should just post on YouTube.
Do a live on YouTube?
No. Post the Instagram live on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think we should.
Because I think it's better for a long form. So,
we also... if you're interested in coaching, our website has information on there. But if you just have questions, reach out to us. Instagram is probably the easiest way for to get Instagram or the website are an easy way to get a response from us. Our reckless training handle is @reckless_training. And both of our handles are listed at the top of the profile. So you can follow us or message us there directly as well. So with that, take us out.
Work hard, stay humble, train reckless.